as after she'd left the hospital, she'd gone over the terms of their agreement. She was certain she'd missed something, and it was just a matter of time before Apollo asked her to do something she couldn't refuse. If Lexa is alive, it will be worth it, she thought. She hoped. When they arrived on the second floor, Jason was already there, sitting in the same wooden chair he'd occupied since Lexa's accident, with his eyes closed. He stirred as they approached and looked at them. Hey, Persephone said as gently as she could. How are you? Jason shrugged. The whites of his eyes were yellow, his skin pallid. How long until we hear something? Sybil asked.
They plan to take her off life support at 9.
His voice was hollow. Persephone and Sybil exchanged a glance. Jason leaned forward and rubbed his face vigorously before standing.
I'm going to get some coffee.
He walked off, and Persephone watched him until he disappeared. No wonder mortals begged Hades to return their loved ones. The threat of death took more than one life. The thought brought tears to her eyes. How was she supposed to rule a kingdom that caused so much pain, that brought suffering to the living? He doesn't know, does he? Sybil asked. Persephone shook her head. He still thought he was losing Lexa today. No one needs to know, she said. Let them think it was a miracle. The two took a seat and waited. Jason eventually came back with a steaming cup of coffee and sat beside her. They didn't speak, which was fine with her. She was lost in thought, unable to focus on any one thing. The longer the silence stretched, the more her anxiety grew. At some point, Lexa's family began to arrive. Soon they were led to a larger room where Lexa had been moved. Lexa's parents were nearest to her, then Jason, several aunts and uncles and friends from her hometown of Ionia. Each person in the room approached her and said their goodbyes, touching her, holding her hand, or kissing her face. When it was Persephone's turn, she scooped up Lexa's hand and pressed a kiss to her cold skin. Please, please wake up, she prayed to no one but Apollo's magic. And to Persephone's surprise, Lexa squeezed her hand. She looked up and met Jason's gaze, but she could tell by his expression that he hadn't seen what happened. She squeezed my hand! Persephone's voice was high-pitched, unfamiliar to her ears, but she was experiencing a rush of adrenaline.
What?
Jason looked down at Lexa and clasped her other hand.
Lexa, Lexa, babe, if you can hear me, squeeze my hand.
There was a flurry of activity after that. Everyone but Lexa's parents were ushered out of the room, and the doctors were called in to check her vitals. Sometime later, Lexa's father came to the waiting room to let everyone know that her body had healed enough in the last 12 hours to support life-sustaining activity.
It's a miracle, he said, eyes watery. A miracle.
Persephone's eyes watered, too, and her body trembled. Her sacrifice had been worth it. Lexa was back.
You did it, Sybil whispered, and the two hugged.
It was then she noticed Jason standing apart from them. She approached, hesitant.
Are you okay? She asked.
Yeah,
Jason said. He sniffed, wiping his eyes. After a moment, he embraced her, his breath releasing in a harsh gasp.
Thank you, Persephone.
His expression of gratitude seemed misplaced, given what Persephone had done. So instead of speaking, she remained quiet, hugging him tighter. They lingered in the waiting room for a little while, talking and laughing. Everything felt strange but hopeful, like the sun was still managing to shine through thick black clouds. At some point, Persephone decided it was time to sneak away. She needed a shower and a few hours of sleep. She said goodbye to Jason, Sybil, and Lexa's family, and left. She made it outside before the hair on the back of her neck stood up, and a terrifying hiss drew her attention skyward, where three women hovered, black leathery wings spread wide. Their limbs were pale white, and black snakes twined around their bodies. Their hair was inky and seemed to float around them as if they were underwater. Each wore a crown of thick spires resembling black blades. They were furies, goddesses of vengeance, and they only popped up when someone broke divine law. "Persephone, daughter of Demeter." They spoke in unison, their voices echoing in her mind like the hiss of a snake. "Fuck. You have broken a sacred law of the underworld, and therefore must be punished." A shiver of fear shook her spine. She had not considered that her decision to help Lexa would be punishable by the three goddesses. Suddenly, a serpent slithered around her feet. Persephone jumped. Oh no, fuck, fuck, fuck! She tried to jump from the middle of the pool of snakes, but they were quick to surround her, slithering up her legs, torso, and shoulders. Their scales were slippery and rough and tightened around her like rope. A faint whisper reached her ears. "Punish, punish, punish." Then one of the serpents sunk its fangs into her shoulder. Persephone screamed. The pain was sharp and the venom burned. Suddenly she was frozen. Her scream dried up in her throat and her legs wouldn't work. She tried to move but fell, striking the cement hard. Her body felt like it was being torn apart. And all of a sudden, everything was dark, and she was falling. She appeared on the floor of Nevernight. She was surprised when Apollo landed on his face beside her. The god groaned, rolling onto his back. Persephone regained movement in her limbs and started to get to her feet when she saw Hades standing over her like a dark cloud. There was an acute fury in his eyes, and she felt like he was skinning her alive with that stare. She had never experienced fear standing opposite him, even after she had published her story on Apollo. But right now it settled heavy and cold in her stomach. Is this what it was like to come before Hades, king of the underworld, judge and punisher? "Fucking furies," Apollo said as he got to his feet, brushing himself off. Persephone glanced at the god, who now spotted Hades.
"You know, you could upgrade to something a little more modern to enforce natural order, Hades. I'd rather be carried off by a well-muscled man than a trio of albino goddesses and a serpent."
"I thought we had a deal, Apollo," Hades gritted out.
Persephone marveled at how her lover could appear so calm and yet infuse his voice with a quiet fury. She felt it in the air, and it settled on her skin, drawing goosebumps to the surface.
"You mean the deal where I stay away from your goddess in exchange for a favor?"
Hades said nothing. Apollo knew the deal.
"I'd have been more obliging, except your little lover showed up at Erotas demanding my help. While I was in the middle of a bath, I should add."
"No, you shouldn't," Persephone hissed.
"She can be very persuasive when she's angry,"
he continued, ignoring her.
"The magic helped."
Apollo didn't even need to say the last part. Hades knew what it meant when she got angry. Loss of control.
"You never said she was a goddess. No wonder you snatched her up quickly."
"Why does everyone say that?" she wondered.
"I could hardly deny her request when she had razor-sharp thorns pointed at my nether regions."
Persephone wanted to vomit, but she glanced at Hades and noted that, despite the anger clouding his face, he seemed a little proud.
"So we struck a deal. A bargain, as you like to call it."
Hades' eyes darkened.
"She asked me to heal her little friend, and in exchange, she provides me with companionship."
"Don't make it sound gross, Apollo."
"Gross?
Everything that comes out of your mouth sounds like a sexual innuendo."
"Does not."
"Does too."
"Enough."
Hades' voice cracked like a whip, and when Persephone looked at him, she saw fire in his eyes. Though he addressed Apollo, his gaze didn't leave her, and she felt it tear away all her layers, exposing the raw and real fear she felt beneath.
"If you are no longer in need of my goddess, I would like a word with her. Alone."
"She's all yours,"
Apollo said, who had the good sense to evaporate and say nothing else. Persephone stood still, staring at Hades. The silence on the floor of Nevernight was tangible. It sat heavy on her shoulders and pressed against her ears. And when his voice erupted, burning away the quiet, it promised pain. She could already feel her heart breaking.
What have you done?
I saved Lexa.
Is that what you think?
He seethed. She could see tendrils of his glamour coming off him like smoke. She'd never seen him lose control of his magic.
She was going to die.
She was choosing to die,
Hades snarled, advancing upon her. His glamour fell away, and he stood before her, stripped of his mortal form. He seemed to fill the room, an inferno, spreading his heat, his anger billowing, eyes inflamed.
And instead of honoring her wish, you intervened, all because you were afraid of pain.
I am afraid of pain, she snapped. Will you mock me for that, as you mock all mortals?
There is no comparison. At least mortals are brave enough to face it.
She flinched, and her anger ignited. A searing pain erupted from all over as thorns sprouted from her skin.
Persephone.
He reached for her, but she stepped away. The movement was painful, and she inhaled between her teeth.
If you cared, you would have been there.
I was there.
You never once came with me to the hospital when I had to watch my best friend lie unresponsive. You never once stood by me while I held her hand. You could have told me when Thanatos would start showing up. You could have let me know she was choosing to die. But you didn't. You hid all of that like it was some fucking secret. You weren't there.
For the first time since she was dumped in front of him by the Furies, he looked shocked and sounded a little lost when he said,
I didn't know you wanted me there.
Why wouldn't I? She asked, and there was a twist in her voice, a note of her sadness she couldn't hide.
I'm not the most welcomed sight at a hospital, Persephone.
That's your excuse?
And what's yours? He asked. You never told me.
I shouldn't have to tell you to be there for me when my friend is dying. Instead, you act like it's as normal as breathing.
Because death has forever been my existence,
he snapped, growing more and more frustrated.
That's your problem. You've been the god of the underworld so long you've forgotten what it is really like to be on the brink of losing someone. Instead, you spend all your time judging mortals for their fear of your realm, for their fear of death, for their fear of losing who they love.
She was a little shocked by the words coming out of her mouth. To be truthful, she hadn't realized how angry she'd been until this very moment.
So you were angry with me, he said. And once again, instead of coming to me, you decided to punish me by seeking Apollo's help.
He spat the god's name, his hatred evident.
I wasn't trying to punish you. When I decided to go to Apollo, I no longer felt like you were an option.
Hades' eyes narrowed.
After everything I did to protect you from him...
I didn't ask that of you, she snapped.
No, I suppose you didn't. You have never welcomed my aid, especially when it wasn't what you wanted to hear.
He sounded so bitter she flinched.
That's not fair.
Isn't it? I have offered an aegis, and you insisted you do not need a guard, yet you are regularly accosted on your way to work. You barely accept rides from Antony, and you only do now because you don't want to hurt his feelings. Then, when I offer comfort, when I try to understand your hurt over Lexa's pain, it isn't enough.
Your comfort? She exploded. What comfort? When I came to you begging you to save Lexa, you offered to let me grieve. What was I supposed to do? Stand back and watch her die when I knew I could prevent it?
Yes, Hades hissed. That's exactly what you were supposed to do. You are not above the law of my realm, Persephone.
Clearly not. The Furies had come after her.
I don't see why her death matters. You come to the underworld every day. You would have seen Lexa again.
Because it's not the same, she snapped.
What is that supposed to mean?
She glared at him, arms crossed tight over her chest. How was she supposed to explain this?
Lexa was her first friend, her closest friend. And just when she thought she had her life in order, she met Hades, who threw it all out of orbit. Lexa was the only anchor to her old life. And now Hades wanted to take her, too? Which led to the real problem. And it hurt to say, because she was admitting her greatest fear. What happens if you and I... She paused, unable to say the words. If the fates decide to unravel our future, I don't want to be so lost in you, so anchored in the underworld, that I don't know how to exist after. Hades' eyes narrowed, but when he spoke, his voice was desolate.
I'm beginning to think that maybe you don't want to be in this relationship.
Those words made her chest feel as if it were caving in. That's not what I'm saying.
Then what are you saying?
She shrugged, and for the first time she felt tears building behind her eyes. I don't know. Just that, right when I was really starting to figure out who I was, you came along and fucked it all up. I don't know who I'm supposed to be. I don't know...
What do you want? He said.
That's not true, she said. I want you. I love...
Don't say you love me,
he interrupted her again.
I can't hear that right now.
The silence that followed made her feel even more hopeless. Her face felt wet, and she touched her cheek, wiping away the tears. I thought you loved me, she whispered.
I do,
he said, staring at the floor.
But I think I may have misunderstood.
Misunderstood what?
The fates,
he said bitterly.
I have waited for you for so long. I ignored the fact that they rarely weave happy endings.
You cannot mean that, she said.
I mean it. You'll find out why soon enough.
Hades restored his glamour and straightened his tie, his eyes void of emotion. How could he recover so quickly when she felt like her insides were destroyed? Then, as if he hadn't already torn a hole through her heart, his parting words reached her, ice cold and haunting.
You should know that your actions have condemned Lexa to a fate worse than death.
Chapter 19, Goddess of Spring. Alone, Persephone collapsed in tears. As she hit the floor, the thorns bursting from her skin were jarred, and she cried out in pain.
Oh, my love.
Persephone felt Hecate's hand on her back. She didn't look at the goddess, sobbing into her blood-covered hands. I messed up, Hecate.
Shh, the goddess soothed. Come. On your feet.
Hecate lifted Persephone, careful to avoid touching the thorns sprouting from her body, and teleported to her cabin. She sat Persephone down, placed her hands over the thorns that had broken her skin, and began to chant. Warmth emanated from her palms. Persephone watched as the barbs began to grow smaller until nothing of the malady was visible. When the wounds were healed, Hecate cleared the blood away and sat down opposite Persephone.
What happened?
Persephone burst into tears again, guilt and agony warring in her mind. She told Hecate everything. The conversation she'd overheard about taking Lexa off life support, her mother's visit, and her trek to the Pleasure District. When it came down to losing her, I couldn't. She choked on a sob. Hecate reached out and covered Persephone's hand with hers. And my mother just made it all worse. There may not be consequences for gods, but there are consequences for me.
There are always consequences. The difference between you and other gods is that you care about them.
Persephone was silent for a moment, and then repeated what Hades had told her. I have condemned Lexa to a fate worse than death. She paused. I just wanted her with me.
Why do you hold on to the mortal realm?
Persephone looked at Hecate.
Because it is where I belong.
Is it?
She asked.
What about the underworld?
When Persephone didn't respond, Hecate shook her head.
My dear, you are trying to be someone you're not.
What do you mean? All I have been trying to do is be myself.
And that had been more difficult than she could ever imagine.
Are you?
She asked.
Because the person who sits before me now does not match the one I see beneath.
And who do you see beneath? She asked, her voice verging on sarcasm.
The goddess of spring,
she answered.
Future queen of the underworld, wife of Hades.
Those words made her shiver.
You are holding on to a life that no longer serves you. A job that punishes you for your relationships. A friendship that could have blossomed in the underworld. A mother who has taught you to be a prisoner.
Persephone bristled at those words.
And if you need any more evidence that you are denying yourself, look no further than the way your magic is manifesting. If you do not learn to love yourself, your powers will tear you apart.
Persephone's brows knitted together. What are you saying, Hecate? That I should abandon my life in the upper world? She shook her head.
You think in extremes, Hecate said. You are either a goddess or a mortal. You either live in the underworld or the upper world. Do you not want it all, Persephone?
Yes, she said, frustrated. Of course I want it all, but everyone keeps telling me I can't.
A slow smile crept across Hecate's face.
Create the life you want, Persephone, and stop listening to everyone else.
Persephone blinked, absorbing Hecate's words.
Create the life you want.
Up until this point, she thought she knew what kind of life she wanted. But what she was realizing now was that things had changed since meeting Hades. Despite her struggle to accept herself and understand her power, he had shifted something inside her. With him came new desires, new hopes, new dreams. And there was no way to attain those without letting go of old ones. She swallowed hard, her eyes watering. I messed up, Hecate, she said.
As we all do,
the goddess replied, standing.
And as we all will. Now, let's channel some of that pain and clean up the mess you made in the grove. Consider it practice.
Persephone didn't argue, finding that she was strangely motivated. The two left Hecate's cottage for the grove. Persephone knew when they were close because she could smell rotten fruit, a terrible mix of sugar and decay.
The goal is to collect all the dead pieces and make them into ripe pomegranates,
Hecate said. How do I do that?
The same way you destroyed it. Except you want to control how much power you use.
Persephone wasn't sure she could, but she remembered the time she spent with Hades and how he taught her to focus her power. That memory made her chest ache in a way she never thought possible.
Magic is balance. A little control, a little passion. It is the way of the world. Imagine the pomegranate whole, a delicious crimson color.
Hecate's voice faded away as Persephone focused on her task.
Close your eyes,
she heard Hades whisper in her ear, and she obeyed as her breath caught in her throat. She could have sworn she felt the scrape of his cheek against hers. He continued to whisper.
Tell me what you feel.
Warmth, she thought.
Focus on it.
As before, it started low in her stomach, and she fed it, tortured by thoughts of Hades.
Where are you warm?
Everywhere, she whispered, and imagined all that warmth in her hands, the energy growing so bright she could barely look at it, like a sun in the palm of her hands, or a dying star.
Open your eyes, Persephone.
She swore his breath caressed her skin. She did, and the shimmering image of a pomegranate sat between her hands. She took a deep, deliberate breath, guiding her hands to the earth, and as she did, pieces of rotting flesh rose from the ground and gathered. Before long, the grove smelled of fresh, ripe fruit, and several whole red pomegranates lay at her feet. When she looked at Hecate, the goddess was clearly surprised.
"Very good, my love," she said.
Persephone would have smiled, but she found that her success in reconstructing the pomegranate was overshadowed by an acute sadness. It made the world feel heavy, and her body feel sluggish. She blinked rapidly, hoping to keep her tears at bay. She wasn't sure if Hecate could sense her turmoil, but the goddess was quick to distract her.
"Come, I will teach you to make poisons, as promised."
The two returned to her cottage, and Persephone sat beside Hecate, who had picked and bound several varieties of plants. "What is all this?"
"The usual. Hemlock, Daphne, deadly nightshade, deathcap, angel's trumpet, curare."
The goddess explained which parts of each plant were deadly and how much it would take of each to kill a target. She also seemed to delight in explaining how the plant would kill. "What would poison do to a god?" Persephone asked. A ghost of a smile touched the goddess's lips.
"Thinking of poisoning Apollo?"
Persephone could feel her cheeks redden.
No!
Hecate laughed quietly.
"Do not feel guilty for contemplating murder, my dear. Most gods have done far worse."
Persephone knew that was true.
"Poison would likely have little impact on Apollo, except to make him very sick, which would be just as fun. Talk about no consequences."
Persephone laughed and filed that bit of information away for later. They spent a while crushing leaves and oils into powerful concoctions until Persephone's hands hurt from using the mortar and pestle, and her eyes stung from the potency of the plants. At one point, she started to rub her eyes when Hecate's hand clamped down on her wrist. Persephone yelped, mostly from surprise. She didn't know Hecate could move that fast.
"Don't."
Hecate led Persephone to a basin. She washed her hands and waited for Hecate to finish up before they made their way to the asphodel fields.
"I have finalized your gown for the summer solstice," Hecate said.
Persephone's stomach felt unsettled. She knew what the goddess was trying to do. She'd already commissioned a new crown for Persephone to wear for the occasion. She was trying to turn her into some sort of queen. And on the heels of her fight with Hades, that made her anxious. When Persephone and Hecate arrived, the souls swarmed. She wasn't sure why, but today their excitement, kindness, and clear devotion to her brought tears to her eyes. Maybe it had something to do with her conversation with Hecate. She'd always known the people of the underworld considered her a goddess. More than that, they'd immediately accepted her as part of their world and hinted at her potential to become queen of the underworld. And all she'd ever done was resist. She was afraid. Afraid she would somehow disappoint them like she had disappointed her mother. Like she had disappointed Hades. She took a deep breath, forcing down the emotion thick within her throat, and pretended like everything was fine. She helped finalize decisions for the solstice celebration, tasted samplings of various meals, approved decor, and played with the children before returning to the upper world. When she arrived home, she broke down. Sybil didn't ask any questions. More than likely, she had already guessed what had happened. The oracle just held her as she cried herself to sleep. Before work the next day, Persephone stopped by the hospital, only to find that Lexa was asleep. "She woke up briefly," Eliska said. "But she was very confused. The doctor gave her a sedative." "Confused?"
Persephone's anxiety spiked, making her stomach feel sick. "They think it's temporary psychosis," she explained. "It isn't unusual for patients who have been in the ICU." Psychosis. Temporary. Her relief was immediate. It was probably too much to expect that Lexa would bounce back. Still, Persephone had let her hopes rise. She'd thought that divine magic would work differently from traditional medicine, that when Apollo talked about miracles, it would mean skipping the recovery, too. "Persephone, are you all right?" Eliska asked. The goddess met the mortal's gaze and nodded. "Yes, I'm fine. Will you text me when Lexa wakes up?"
"Of course, dear."
She paused, studying her. Whatever Eliska was seeing in Persephone's expression had her suspicious, because she asked again,
"Are you sure you're okay?"
"No," Persephone thought. "My whole world is falling apart." She nodded. "Yeah, just tired." She felt silly saying that. Eliska was tired, too.
"I understand. I promise to text you as soon as Lexa wakes."
She reached for Persephone, hugging her close.
"I'm so thankful Lexa has a friend like you."
Persephone swallowed hard, and her eyes watered. Again, Hades' words erupted in her mind.
"You should know that your actions have condemned Lexa to a fate worse than death."
They'd attached themselves to her like a leech hungry for blood. They made her head and heart ache. They made her want to scream. "I am not a good friend. I am not a good lover. I am not a good goddess." Work was awkward. Persephone didn't feel comfortable around Dimitri since learning about the bargain he'd made with Apollo. To make matters worse, he had resorted to assigning her menial tasks like making copies, verifying another coworker's work, and delegated some research he was supposed to do on a privacy law. He'd sent her the to-do list in an email with an end-of-day deadline, which meant she couldn't work on any of the stories she had in her queue. She rapped on Dimitri's open door. "Have a moment?" she asked when he looked up from his tablet.
"Not really," he said. "Another time?"
"It's about the to-do list." Dimitri took off his glasses and stared at her.
"It's three things, Persephone. How hard can it be?"
His comment flustered her. "It isn't," she snapped. "But I have other stories."
"Not today,"
he cut her off.
"Today, you have three things to accomplish by 5.
Persephone set her teeth so hard she thought her jaw might break.
"Close the door as you leave."
She slammed it. Probably not the best move, but it was better than filling the guy with holes from the thorn she wanted to throw at him. She took a few breaths, deciding it would be best if she just got through the tasks Dimitri had assigned. When she was finished, she could comb through the information she'd received over the last few weeks trying to decide on her next story. She had several options available to her, and a million lines of inquiry. But the information she gravitated toward always included her mother. The goddess of harvest should be renamed the goddess of divine punishment, because she was definitely fond of torture, and her methods were vicious, often forcing mortals into starvation or cursing them with an unquenchable hunger. Now and then, when she was really pissed off, she would create famine, killing off whole populations. "My mother is the worst," Persephone thought. By the time lunch rolled around, Persephone was entertaining herself with thoughts of writing about Demeter. She could see the headline in black, bold letters. "Nurturing Goddess of Harvest Deprives Whole Populations of Food." Then she cringed, imagining the fallout. It was likely Demeter would take revenge, and probably in the most devastating way Persephone could imagine— revealing that she was actually Demeter's daughter. With that thought, Persephone left the Acropolis and met Sybil at Mithaeus Cafe for lunch. Her mind was chaotic, going in several directions, dwelling on Lexa's healing and Hades' anger, making it hard for her to focus on anything the Oracle was saying, which made her feel guilty because Sybil had news.
I had a job offer this week, she was saying, which got Persephone's attention. From the Cyprus Foundation. Persephone lit up. Oh, Sybil, I'm so happy for you. I should be thanking you, she said. I'm sure you're why they picked me. She shook her head. Hades knows talent when he sees it. The oracle didn't look so certain. Persephone couldn't explain why, but her excitement for Sybil dwindled quickly as a heavy feeling settled on her chest. It was a combination of feelings, guilt, hopelessness, and a ton of unspoken feelings. I have to hang out with Apollo, she said abruptly. Sybil stared at Persephone. That was the bargain, Persephone explained. I just want you to know. I'm glad you told me, she replied. And Persephone couldn't help thinking she was too nice, too understanding. Do you remember at the gala when you told me my colors and Hades' colors were all... Her voice faltered, the question poised on her tongue. Sybil's eyes were searching, and she pressed her lips together. Persephone wasn't sure if it was because she was trying to keep from saying something she would regret or if she was trying not to smile. Either way, Persephone had to ask, Are they still tangled up? They are, she said quietly. I wish you could see it. It is beautiful, sensual, and chaotic. Persephone offered a humorless laugh. Chaotic is right. She smiled. Well, I did say it was a tangle. Persephone gave her a questioning look. It is what happens when two powerful people meet. Discord? Persephone asked. And passion and bliss. Sybil was smiling completely now. Persephone looked away. She and Hades definitely had all of those things, but were they possible to reclaim after all she had done? Sybil placed a hand on Persephone's. You were always meant for greatness, Persephone, but getting there will be war. She shivered. Not literal war, right? Sybil didn't say. They left, walking in opposite directions, Persephone to work and Sybil to the hospital to visit Lexa. Persephone hadn't heard from Aliska, so assumed Lexa had yet to wake up. The thought made her anxious. Did that mean Apollo's magic hadn't worked? She pushed those thoughts aside. Apollo was an ancient god, his magic well practiced. Lexa is still healing. She is tired, Persephone told herself. She needs her rest. She took a shortcut back to the Acropolis. She was getting used to avoiding the attention of journalists and rabid fans of the divine, and that meant avoiding the main roads in favor of narrow alleyways. While they weren't as pleasant as the well-landscaped sidewalks of New Athens, she'd learned it was the easiest way to get where she needed in the least amount of time, because there were fewer people, and those she did encounter didn't seem to care that she was there. Which was probably why she noticed a snowy cat with large green eyes following her. She knew by its mannerisms, strangely human and attentive, that the creature was a shapeshifter. Shapeshifters didn't use glamour to mask appearances. Their biology allowed them to change forms, which meant Persephone couldn't see what they were beneath their animal form. Persephone continued walking for a while, pretending that she hadn't noticed the cat wandering the alleys with her. When she was sufficiently out of sight of any onlookers, she stopped. The cat seemed surprised and halted too. Then, as if remembering it was supposed to be a cat, the creature began to lick its paw. Gross, Persephone thought. This stone is not clean. Shift, she ordered. If it was sent, as she suspected, by Hades, the shifter would have no choice but to expose itself. Despite this, the cat attempted to run away. Clearly, it hadn't expected Persephone to confront it. Mid-run, its body straightened and grew, transforming into a slender female woman. She was tall and dressed in gold armor. Her dark hair was braided and fell over her shoulder to her waist. Persephone noted several weapons attached to her body,
A long sword at her hip, a set of knives crossed on her back, a dagger around her bare thigh. She was an Aegis and an Amazon, a daughter of Ares, bred for brutality and war. She knelt on one knee, pressing a hand to her chest as she did, and said,
"My lady."
"Don't." Persephone's voice was sharp, and the warrior met her gaze, standing. "Hades sent you?"
"It is an honor to serve you, my lady."
"I didn't ask for this," Persephone said.
"Lord Hades worries for you. I will keep you safe."
She really hated the way those words made hope bloom in her chest. "I don't need you to keep me safe. I can take care of myself. I've lived in the mortal world for years, and trust me, if an Amazon comes to my rescue, it'll only make things harder for me." The woman raised her head, defiant.
"I will do as Lord Hades commands."
"Then I will speak with Lord Hades," she replied, twisting on her heels.
"Please."
Persephone was stopped by the shakiness in the Amazon's voice. She faced the woman.
"I shouldn't expect you to care, but I need this. I need this charge. I need this honor."
"Why?" Persephone was genuinely curious, but she didn't like the change it inspired in the Amazon. The woman looked at her feet. Her shoulders fell. Whatever her reasoning, it was a burden. Then she said,
"I do not wish to expose my shame."
A strained silence followed, and after a moment, Persephone asked, "What's your name?" The woman looked bewildered.
"You may call me Aegis, my lady."
"I prefer to call you by your name," Persephone answered. "Just as I prefer you call me Persephone."
"Lord Hades,
I really wish Lord Hades' staff would stop telling me what he dislikes or likes. Clearly he hasn't made that consideration for me." She regretted the outburst because she was essentially referring to the Aegis. But the woman smiled.
"It's okay."
She paused.
"I'm Zophie."
"Zophie," Persephone said her name. "If it is that important to you, I will not dismiss you." But she would have words with Hades when she decided to talk to him again.
"Thank you, Persephone."
"I'm running late," she said, and began to back away. And then she pointed at what the woman was wearing. "We'll talk about the armor later," Zophie advanced.
"Lord Hades said not to let you out of my sight."
Persephone rolled her eyes. "You're a cat, Zophie. I can't bring you into my office."
"I'm content to wait for you outside," she offered.
Persephone sighed. "Fine. We'll talk about that later, too." Persephone left the alleyway, and her new Aegis followed. She had a lot of questions for the woman. Namely, where was she from, and why was it so important for her to keep this position? Persephone couldn't refuse when she'd seen the look in her eyes, because she had recognized it in herself. It was hopelessness. She wondered if the god of the dead had chosen her Aegis strategically, knowing Persephone wouldn't be able to deprive someone of their dream. Chapter 20. Competition. Persephone decided to deal with Zophie's armor quickly. Upon leaving work, the Amazon trotted alongside her toward Hades' Lexus and hopped inside. "To the Pearl, Antony." She wondered if Aphrodite would be in the boutique. Since Zophie was Hades' employee and she had been appointed to guard Persephone in the upper world, surely he wouldn't mind if she charged clothing, shoes, and accessories to his account. And if he did, well, it was his fault for undermining her. Antony glanced in the rearview mirror.
"I see you met Zophie," he said.
"Don't tell me you knew about this, Antony." The Cyclops ducked his head a little, as if to hide from her frustration.
"I think it was inevitable, my lady."
Persephone didn't respond. She looked out the window as they passed marble-white buildings, stoic churches, and colorful apartments, until they came to Aphrodite's shop. Persephone picked Zophie up, who protested with a loud whine. "Shh," she commanded. No one lets their cat walk into a shop of their own free will. She stepped out of the limo and into the shop.
I didn't know you liked pussies, Aphrodite said, materializing as soon as Persephone sat the cat on the floor.
The goddess was a little more covered than usual, wearing a silk champagne dress embossed with flowers. It had thin straps, came to her mid-calf, and looked more like a nightgown than something to wear in public. But Persephone was discovering that was Aphrodite's modus operandi.
Shift, Persephone ordered, and Zophie became human again.
Aphrodite's eyes narrowed upon the Amazon.
A daughter of Ares, she said. I'm not surprised.
Persephone's brows drew together. What do you mean?
Hades would only ever assign the best to protect you.
Zophie bowed her head.
It is an honor for you to say, Lady Aphrodite.
The goddess of love offered a half-smile, but it was not kind.
Of course. Everyone knows Amazons are brutal, aggressive, and full of bloodlust. You're all just like your father.
Zophie stiffened beside her, and Persephone wondered why the goddess felt the need to be so cruel. Aphrodite, I'm hoping to purchase a new wardrobe for my Aegis, Persephone said quickly. I need her to blend in if she's going to protect me. It was hard for Persephone to say the word. She didn't want to need protection. She wanted to protect herself. But at this point, after what had happened a few days ago, it was likely she'd just rip herself apart.
What's the matter? Wartime chic? Too flashy for you?
Persephone gave Aphrodite a dull look as she began pulling clothing off racks and handing it to the attendants. What colors do you like, Zophie? Persephone asked.
I don't know, she said. I've never thought about it.
Persephone paused and looked at her. Never thought about it?
We are warriors, Lady Persephone.
That doesn't mean you can't enjoy fashion, Persephone remarked, and then laughed to herself. She sounded like Lexa. When the attendants' arms were piled high with clothes, Persephone ushered Zophie into one of the changing rooms and took a seat. Aphrodite lounged nearby.
How is the love life? Aphrodite asked.
Why do you always ask that? The question frustrated her for obvious reasons. She hadn't seen Hades since their fight, and she'd agonized over the status of their relationship since.
I've never asked it of you before. I can usually smell it.
Persephone rolled her eyes, still repulsed by Aphrodite's unusual skills.
Then I guess you have your answer.
Persephone didn't look at Aphrodite. She stared at the curtain that Zophie had disappeared behind.
You might not be having sex, but you still love him, Aphrodite said.
Of course I love Hades. No one needed magic to see that.
Have you told him?
I tried, she said.
Don't say you love me.
Aphrodite was quiet for a long moment and then said,
I have never told anyone I loved them and meant it.
What about Hephaestus?
I have never told him that I loved him.
There was an uncomfortable pause, and then Persephone asked, Is that because you really do love him? Aphrodite didn't answer, and Zophie picked that moment to leave the changing room in a tailored blue dress that made her look remarkably tan and accentuated her athleticism.
Oh, Zophie, you look beautiful!
The Amazon flushed crimson and stood in front of the mirror, smoothing her hands over the fabric.
It's not very conducive to fighting, she commented, attempting to kick out her feet and squat.
Oh, darling, if you cannot fight in heels and a tailored dress in this age, how can you call yourself a warrior?
Persephone couldn't tell if Aphrodite was being serious or not. It was easy for an immortal to say something like that. Gods were virtually invincible.
Let's hope you won't have a reason to fight anyone while you're guarding me, Persephone said.
Zophie disappeared behind the curtain again. She tried on several outfits, preferring pantsuits over skirts and dresses. Persephone did manage to convince the Amazon to buy one dress, a floor-length gown in the same color blue as the first one she'd tried on, arguing that if the warrior was going to be her aegis, she would have to attend formal events. When they were finished shopping, Persephone and Zophie stood outside Aphrodite's shop. "Do you have a home?" she asked. "My home is in Terme," she answered. That was north and several hundred miles away. "Do you have a place to stay here in New Athens?" Zophie frowned and seemed confused.
"I must go where you go, Persephone."
It was then a thought occurred to her. "Where would you have stayed had I not discovered you?"
"Outside,"
she said. "Zophie!"
"It is fine, my lady. I am resilient."
"Resilient, I have no doubt. I won't have you sleeping outside, as a cat or otherwise. You can sleep on the couch for now." They would work out sleeping arrangements again once Lexa returned home. Sybil had taken Lexa's bed for the time being, and it wasn't likely Persephone would be sleeping in the underworld for the next few weeks.
"I cannot sleep," Zophie said.
"What do you mean?"
"I do not need sleep. Who will watch over you if I am not awake?"
"Zophie, I've survived this long without being abducted. I'm sure I'll be fine." But as the words left her mouth, she felt foreign magic grip her and the familiar pull of being sucked into a void. Someone was forcing her to teleport. "Zophie!" The Amazon's eyes widened, and the last thing she saw before she vanished was the determined look on Zophie's face as she reached for her. A second later, Persephone was thrust into the middle of a screaming crowd. The air was hazy and sticky. It smelled like tobacco and body odor.
"There she is!"
Apollo wrapped an arm around her neck and hauled her against him. He was sweaty and dressed casually in a polo shirt and jeans.
"What the actual fuck, Apollo?" Persephone demanded, pushing away savagely.
But the god held her tight, pulling her along through the crowd toward a small stage at the front of the room. As he did, he turned his head toward hers, whispering against her ear.
"We had a bargain, goddess."
She hated the feel of his breath on her skin. She should have expected Apollo to abduct her at any given moment. It was a part of the deal she'd forgotten to clarify, and now she regretted it. She was thrust beneath bright lights. They blinded her and made the whole place appear darker, so it was hard to tell just how many people were in the crowd in front of her. Apollo grabbed the mic and cried into it,
"Persephone Rossi, everyone! You may know her as Hades' lover, but tonight she's our jury, judge, and executioner."
The crowd cheered. Apollo returned the mic to its cradle and reached for Persephone's arm. She recoiled, but the god placed his hand on her back, guiding her to a chair to the side of the stage.
"Stop touching me, Apollo," she said through her teeth.
"Stop acting like you don't like me," the god replied.
"I don't. Liking you wasn't part of the deal," she snapped.
Apollo's eyes flashed.
"I'm not opposed to ending the bargain, Persephone, if you can live with the death of your friend."
She glared and sat. Apollo smiled.
"Good girl. Now, you are going to sit here with a smile on that pretty face and judge this competition for me. Got it?"
Apollo patted her face. She wanted to kick him in the balls, but refrained, gripping the edges of her chair. As he turned back to the crowd, they began to chant his name. The god encouraged this by pumping his arms in the air.
"Ladies and gentlemen of the lyre, we have a challenger in our midst."
The crowd booed, but Persephone felt relieved that she finally knew where she was. The lyre was a venue in New Athens where musicians of all kinds performed. It was located in the arts district at the edge of the city.
"A satyr who claims he is a better musician than me."
More boos from the crowd.
"You know what I say to that? Prove it."
He drew away from the mic, his face awash in the light from the stage.
"Bring the competitor forth."
There was a disruption, and Persephone watched as the crowd split. Two burly men dragged a satyr between them. He was young and blonde, his hair a nest of curls atop his head. His jaw was set, and his chest rose and fell quickly, giving away his fear. But his eyes were narrowed, black, and set upon Apollo with a hatred that Persephone could feel.
Satyr, your hubris will be punished.
The crowd cheered, and Apollo motioned for the men to bring the young man forward. They shoved him onto the stage, and he stumbled, falling to his knees. Persephone watched as Apollo summoned an instrument from thin air. It looked like a type of flute, and when the satyr saw it, his eyes widened. Clearly it was important to him. Apollo tossed it to him, and he caught it against his chest.
Play it, the god ordered. Show us your talents, Marsyas.
For a moment, the boy seemed even more frightened at hearing his name leave the god's mouth. And then she watched as he rose to his feet, his expression determined. Marsyas put the flute to his lips and began to perform. At first, Persephone could barely hear the music he created because the crowd was so unruly. She couldn't help thinking that they seemed to be under some sort of spell, but slowly they fell silent. Persephone watched Apollo, noting the way he clenched his fists and the tension in his shoulders. Clearly, he hadn't expected the satyr to be good. His music was beautiful. It was sweet, and it swelled, filling the whole room, sweeping into pores and twining with blood. Somehow, it knew exactly how to target each dark emotion, each painful memory, and by the end, Persephone found herself crying. The crowd was quiet, and Persephone couldn't tell if they were stunned into silence or if Apollo was preventing them from reacting with his magic. So she started to clap, and slowly the rest joined in, whistling, cheering, and chanting the satyr's name. Apollo's face reddened, and he gazed menacingly at Persephone and the young man before summoning his own instrument, a lyre. As he strummed, a pretty tune emerged, and each note seemed to carry longer than the last. It was a strange and ethereal sound, one that didn't calm, but commanded attention. Persephone felt as if she were on the edge of her seat, and she couldn't figure out why. Was she fearful of Apollo? Or was she waiting for the music to transform into something more? When he ended, the crowd erupted into applause. Persephone felt like an invisible hand had clasped her heart and just released it. She sagged into her chair, taking deep breaths. Apollo bowed to the crowd and then turned to Persephone.
And now let us welcome our beautiful judge.
He smiled, but his gaze was threatening. He gestured for Persephone to join him in the spotlight. She did, cringing when his arm snaked around her waist.
Persephone, beautiful goddess that you are, tell us who is the winner of tonight's competition. Marsyas?
He paused to let the crowd boo, the earlier hypnosis they'd experienced while listening to his music gone.
Or me, the god of music.
The crowd cheered, and Apollo shoved the mic in her face. She could feel her heart beating hard in her chest, and sweat beaded on her forehead. She hated these lights. They were too bright and too hot. She looked at Apollo, and then at Marsyas, who seemed just as frightened by what she might say. She spoke, her lips brushing the hard metal of the mic. Marsyas. That was when all hell broke loose. The crowd cried in protest, and some rushed the stage. At the same time, the burly men who had dragged the satyr to the stage returned and grabbed him again, forcing him to his knees.
No, no, please!
It was the first time the young man had spoken. He pleaded with her, his dark eyes desperate.
Take it back! Lord Apollo, I was wrong to speak against your talent. You are superior!
But his pleas fell on deaf ears because Apollo only had eyes for Persephone.
You dared defy me, he said through his teeth.
His jaw was clenched so hard the veins in his neck popped. There is no fine print, Apollo. Marsyas was better than you. It didn't help that she had never actually liked Apollo's music. The god's fury soon turned to amusement, and a wicked smile cut across his beautiful face.
The sudden change in his demeanor turned her blood to ice.
Jury, judge, and executioner, Persephone.
He turned toward the crowd.
You have heard Persephone's verdict, he cried into the mic. Marsyas, the winner!
The crowd was still angry. They shouted obscenities and threw things at the stage. Persephone ducked behind Apollo.
Careful, he warned. She is protected by Hades.
She found it odd that he would say that, thinking he might prefer that she face the abuse. But at his reminder, the crowd calmed.
Though Marsyas is the winner, he is still guilty of hubris. How shall we punish him?
Hang him, someone yelled. Gut him, another said. Flay him, several cried.
The cheers were the loudest then.
So be it.
Apollo returned the mic to its cradle and twisted toward Marsyas, who was struggling in the arms of the men who held him.
Apollo, you cannot be serious. Persephone reached for him, and the god shoved her aside.
Hubris is the downfall of humanity and should be punished, he said. I will be the punisher.
He is a child, she argued. If he is guilty of hubris, you are too. Is your pride too wounded to let him live?
Apollo clenched his fists.
His death is on your hands, Persephone.
The goddess jumped in front of him, blocking Marsyas from view.
You will not touch him. You will not hurt him.
She was desperate, and she feared she might lose control. She could feel her magic pulsing, making her flesh tingle and her hair rise. Apollo laughed.
And how will you stop me?
Apollo's magic surrounded her, suffocating her with the smell of laurel. She glared at him.
Now,
he turned back to Marsyas.
Let the skinning begin.
Persephone felt nauseous. This can't be happening. Apollo summoned a blade from thin air. Its edges gleamed beneath the burning lights. Persephone struggled to free herself, but the more she resisted, the heavier Apollo's magic felt. She watched, wide-eyed and terrified, as Apollo knelt before the satyr and pressed the blade to his cheek. When she saw blood drip down his face, she lost control. Stop! She screamed at the top of her lungs. Her magic fled from her body. It was an unusual feeling, like it was coming out of all her pores and her mouth and her eyes. It burned as if it were tearing skin and blinded as if it were pure light. When the feeling faded, she was shocked to find everyone frozen. Apollo, his men, the crowd, everyone except Marsyas. The satyr stared at Persephone, face pale and stained with crimson from the wound Apollo had made.
You're a goddess.
Persephone rushed to him and tried to pry the man's fingers from the satyr's arm, but they were wrapped too tightly. Frantic, she looked for another option. She didn't know how long her magic would hold. She wasn't even sure how she'd manage to freeze the whole room. Then her eyes fell to the knife Apollo held inches from Marsyas' face. She reached for it, and the slick handle slipped from his grasp. She took a few deep breaths before cutting into the man's fingers so that Marsyas could free himself. Run, she said.
He will find me, he argued, rubbing his arm.
I promise you he won't come after you again, she said. Go! The satyr obeyed. She waited until he was out of sight to turn to Apollo and kick him hard in the balls. The release of aggression was enough, and the whole room came to life again.
Motherfucker!
The man behind her roared, clutching his hand to his chest, while Apollo collapsed to the ground, groveling. Persephone loomed over him. Don't you ever put me in that situation again. Persephone's voice shook with anger. Apollo breathed heavily, glaring up at her. We might have an agreement, but I will not be used. Fuck you. She left the building with a smile on her face. Chapter 21, A Touch of Betrayal. When Persephone returned home, she found Sybil, Zophie, and Antony in her living room.
Oh, thank the gods, Sybil said, rushing to embrace her. Are you okay?
I'm fine, Persephone said.
Truthfully, she hadn't felt this good in a while.
Where were you? Zophie demanded.
The liar, Apollo decided today was the day he would take advantage of our bargain, Persephone said. Zophie's eyes widened.
You have a bargain with Apollo?
She didn't respond, and moved into the living room to sit on the couch, suddenly exhausted. The three followed her. Did you tell Hades I was abducted? Antony rubbed the back of his neck and turned a little pink. He didn't need to answer. She knew the Cyclops had. Persephone sighed. Someone should let him know I'm okay so he doesn't destroy the world. Antony and Zophie exchanged a look.
I'll do it, Antony said. I'm glad you're okay, Persephone.
She smiled at the Cyclops. Once he was gone, Sybil sat beside Persephone.
What did Apollo make you do?
Persephone told Sybil and Zophie what had happened, leaving out how she managed to freeze everyone in the whole room and that she'd cut someone's fingers off. She decided she did want them to know she had kicked Apollo in the balls, though. Sybil laughed. Zophie tried to hide her amusement, probably because she feared retaliation. I don't think he'll force me to judge another competition anytime soon, she said. Or abduct me from the street.
There was silence for a long moment.
Any updates on Lexa? Persephone asked Sybil.
The Oracle shook her head. She was still asleep when I visited.
More silence. There was a strange kind of exhaustion that seemed to settle upon them all at once, and Persephone sighed.
I'm going to bed. See you guys tomorrow.
They said goodnight, and Persephone made her way to her room. She paused as she opened the door, overwhelmed by Hades' scent. Her heart beat faster in her chest, and her skin was hot. She felt silly, both excited and anxious at the possibility of seeing and speaking to him. She closed the door and said,
"How long have you been here?"
"Not long."
His voice came from the darkness. There was a rough undercurrent to his tone. She knew he was trying to keep a cap on his emotions. She could feel them raging around her, anger and fear and lust and longing. She would take them all if it meant being close to him.
"You know what happened?" she asked.
"I overheard, yes."
"Are you angry?"
She whispered the words and found that she feared his response.
"Yes," he said. "But not with you."
He had kept his distance until that point, and then she felt him, his energy reaching for hers. His hands found her arms, her shoulders, and then her face. She inhaled sharply at his touch.
"I couldn't sense you," he said. "I couldn't find you."
Persephone placed her hands over his. "I'm here, Hades. I'm fine." She thought he might kiss her, but instead he let go and turned on her light. It burned her eyes.
"You will never know how difficult this is for me."
"I imagine as difficult as it's been for me to deal with Minthe and Laoce." Hades' eyes darkened. "Except that Apollo has never been my lover." He scowled. She was provoking him, but she needed to see his emotion, to see that he cared.
"You have not been to the underworld."
Persephone folded her arms over her chest. "I've been busy," she said, "and angry and afraid."
"The souls miss you, Persephone,"
Hades said at last. She looked at him, unsure where he was going with this. Did he miss her?
"Do not punish them because you are angry with me."
"Don't lecture me, Hades. You have no idea what I've been dealing with."
"Of course not. That would mean you'd have to talk to me."
She glared. "You mean like you talk to me? I'm not the only one with communication problems, Hades."
"I didn't come here to argue with you," he said, "or lecture you. I came to see if you were okay."
"Why come at all? Antony would have told you."
"I had to," he said,
and looked away, setting his jaw.
I had to see you myself.
She could feel what he didn't say. The emotions that swelled between them were heavy with desperation and fear. But why wasn't he saying that?
Hades, I... She took a step toward him. She wasn't sure what she was going to say. Maybe, I'm sorry? Those words didn't quite seem like enough, though. And she didn't have a chance to figure it out before Hades spoke.
I should go. I'm late for a meeting.
He vanished, and Persephone exhaled, leaning against her door for support. Her body suddenly felt heavy, and torturous thoughts rolled through her head. He couldn't get away from you fast enough, she thought. Sadness curled into her chest, aching and hot. She made her way into the shower and stood under the hot spray until it was ice cold. After, she climbed into bed. She missed Hades. His comfort, his conversation, his touch, his teasing, his passion. She missed everything about him. She groaned and rolled onto her side. Funny, she could hear Lex's voice in her head.
Why didn't you just ask him to stay?
He didn't give me the chance. He was busy anyway.
Did you even try to stop him?
No. They'd already been arguing. What would they have done if he'd stayed?
Had really hot makeup sex?
Lexa commented in her head. She managed to smile, despite the tears that pricked her eyes. For a moment, her thoughts spiraled. How had she gotten here? She'd severed her relationship with her mother and ended a bargain with Hades just to jump into another with Apollo. Her best friend was in the hospital, her future still uncertain, and she hadn't really liked her job since Dimitri's ultimatum.
What the fuck are you doing, Persephone? She whispered aloud.
Your best,
she heard Lexa reply before she fell into a deep sleep. With no update on Lexa from her mother, Persephone headed straight to work. Antony came to a stop in front of the Acropolis, glancing in the rearview mirror.
Would you like me to escort you?
She was looking out the window when he spoke, and his voice filled her with dread. Not because he was asking to escort her, but because she had to get out of the car. She'd been trying her hardest to embrace the screaming crowd, but today she didn't feel like faking it. She was sad. She looked at the ogre. No, but thank you, Antony. Persephone left the Lexus, entering the throng of screaming fans and reporters.
Persephone! Persephone!
She kept her head down, walking with determined steps toward the Acropolis.
Persephone, have you seen the divine?
Do you know the woman Hades was seen with last night?
Her steps faltered, and she paused, searching the crowd for the person who asked the question, when her eyes settled on a paper one of the mortals held. On the front page of the Delphi Divine was a photo of Hades and Laoce hand in hand. The title screamed back at her,
Hades steps out with mysterious woman.
She walked up to the mortal and snatched the paper from their hands. Everything around her suddenly felt distant, the sound drowned out by a rushing in her ears.
I'm late for a meeting,
she heard Hades' voice in her head.
Late for a liaison, she thought bitterly. Gods, she'd been so stupid. Had he been so angry with her, he'd sought Laoce's comfort? And so publicly, too. He must want to torture her. Months ago, he'd never allowed himself to be photographed. But suddenly he was appearing on the front page of the Divine. But she didn't just feel betrayed by Hades. She felt betrayed by Laoce. After everything she'd done to help the nymph, this was how she repaid her? Persephone headed inside, the paper clutched in her fist. Helen looked up when she got off the elevator, and for the first time since she started at New Athens News, didn't ask her if she was okay. The goddess stowed her stuff, including the paper. She wasn't sure why she wanted to keep it. Maybe so she could shove it in Hades' face when she saw him again. Maybe because she liked torture. She turned on her computer and made coffee, her mind whirling with so many emotions she couldn't concentrate,
and she felt like she was having hot flashes. One moment she was angry, the next she could barely keep her tears at bay. At some point, she moved on to trying to rationalize the situation. Maybe it was all a misunderstanding. She knew the media could deceive. One photo only told part of the story. She pulled the paper out again and studied the picture. Hades and Laoki looked determined. Their expressions were serious. Because they knew they'd been caught, she thought. What explanation would Hades give? Did she even want to hear?